Hi, this is Cecily Armstrong. Thank you for listening to this week's show on your favorite podcast platform. You can go to our website, grapesgrainscrub.com, for pictures, stories, recipes, music, and extras about this episode and other episodes, delicious travel ideas, my culinary picks, and a lot more. Okay, so let's get started. I hope you enjoy this week's episode. You're listening to Grapes, Grains, and Grub, where we believe agriculture tastes good. And I'm your host, Cecily Armstrong. Today, my special guest is someone I've known for, about 9 years or so, Mike Cameron. He is the co-founder, president, and COO of Devil's River Whiskey, the president of the Texas Distilled Spirits Association, and a man who is passionate about distilling and all things made artistically with fine ingredients. His company has a 360-degree approach to business that includes working closely with farmers, giving back to the earth, recycling water, and even their barrels find new homes after use. He has a lot of interesting facts I bet you didn't know about what it means to be a true bourbon. Now, bourbon is the U.S. Appellation spirit. It can only be made in the U.S. as declared in 1964 by our government. Just listen and learn what qualifies as a true bourbon and learn what a small batch is and about the mash recipe and the importance of yeast to make a whiskey. It's really interesting. Mike says that the whiskey category continues to have double-digit growth every year. He tells me that the industry is using not millions of pounds of grain, but billions of pounds of grain a year. And that's just in Texas alone.
I really feel that way, that we have such a 360 business. And what I mean by that is we're working with local farmers. They're helping us with our grain sourcing. We use Texas water, which the water that we use in particular for this is actually from the region of the Devil's River. And then we age this in oak barrels. When we empty the barrels, we sell the barrels to either craft brewers or craft wineries or other craft distilleries or tequila producers in Mexico, or Scotch producers in Scotland. They always want used barrels. We have to use new barrels every time. So that's another 360 part of our business. You can use those barrels over and over again.
Later in the show, we reveal this episode's culinary destination and my picks this week, including a product I really never thought I would use, and now it's a staple in my pantry. And a couple of other items I'm really digging right now. But before we get to my conversation with Mike Cameron, here's our weekly front of house segment with entertaining and hospitality expert Robert Rodriguez. He's sharing his professional inside scoop and tips about the importance of china and platters during your next dinner or event. Taking us from front of house to your house on every episode of Grapes, Grains, and Grub. And here we are with Robert Rodriguez in studio today for our front of house segment. You can hear on every episode of Grapes, Grains, and Grub. We're so excited to have you here today, and we are talking about everything plates, right? Plates, platters, yes. How to set a table. Welcome, Robert. What do you have today?
Thank you. China.
We're going to China.
Yeah, we're going to China. We're taking a trip.
I love it.
You know, it doesn't get all the glitz and glamour that things like glassware and silverware get, but it's absolutely necessary. All the food that we eat touches it at some point. And it does still tell, you know, the personality of our design and how we want things to look. And there's very many different pathways to follow when looking at china and plates and serviceware. You know, the design can be very simple and elegant to let the food shine, almost like an empty palette every single time, you know, so the chef has that empty palette to create beautifully plated, elegant dishes. You know, that's not always the goal, though. Sometimes it's, you know, a whole fried fish or something that that requires a little bit more heft and weight. And, you know, there are great local artisans in many communities that can help provide custom things or things that have lots of unique stories and that can really deliver on that style and that that sense of place. You know, if you're using local ingredients and whole animals or you know, even local vegetables from the farmer's market, really having that sense of place and being able to tap into what's around you from a china perspective is really special.
Yeah. Yeah, and they really do tell a story, not only maybe the history of a family or honoring a remembrance of something or someone, an occurrence. But really, I think what you're talking about too with this is the ability to tell a story about the actual main dish, meaning the main item on that dish that you're serving.
Yes. It's fun to have that, you know, in your arsenal, so to speak, you know, that fish platter that you use because you know that you want to do that, you know, for Christmas or whatever the occasion is, or, you know, that special platter that you do that special salad that grandma always made, you know, and you pull that out a couple of times a year. So it's fun to have those pieces for sure on a personal level, just entertaining at home, and especially when you're with family and friends.
You know, on every front of house segment, we always talk about planning and preparation because we look to you for that. You are helping us, dear listeners at home, think ahead because we have such busy lives and jam-packed schedules, and we get excited about a dinner or doing something, but we forget to prepare.
I definitely recommend, especially if it's a family holiday, and I do this all the time, it's lay out everything in advance. You know what you're going to put that certain dish in and know where that's going to go on the table, just to make sure, just to kind of have a dry run of what's going to fit where. That way, you know, you just take that off of your mind. It gives you confidence that you know you're going to be able to pull it off and that everything's going to fit and it's going to be just fine. So planning ahead, definitely, and working on those lists, checklists for everything, because then you know that you haven't missed anything, and you know, it's not 3 hours later and you're like, oh, I never put that salad out. It's still in the fridge. So, you know, it's important to work off those lists and plan ahead.
So Robert, let's talk about mismatched and mix matching. Because sometimes you end up with a mismatched set.
One thing with china is don't get emotionally attached because it's going to break, it's going to chip, things are going to get thrown away, things will happen. So you will end up with those incomplete sets. And that's a blessing because you can kind of fill in the blanks with other things that you find at, you know, flea markets and thrift stores and things like that. It's a lot of fun to mix and match. If you have a smaller dinner party, then you certainly could tailor it to each guest. It's something that would make it very special and make it very intimate as far as the people that you're entertaining, you know, everyone having their own set of china. That would be kind of fun.
So my takeaway here, again, is too long to list, but my top items are, I'm going to think more about the personality of the table for when I'm choosing the plates, and I'm going to be less rigid about having to have all things match, and I'm going to think more about, and when I say I, it's a collective I, right? To the audience, because I think I know what you're thinking, listeners, but also just about how that fits into the whole scheme of the dinner and the flavor of the dinner and where does the food come from? You know, on Grapes, Grains, and Grub, we love to honor the farmers and the ranchers and all the makers who create these incredible, wonderful delights that we get to eat. Once again, Robert Rodriguez has given us way too much to think about. I love having you in the studio here. Thanks for coming in today.
I love being here. It's a nice break. Time to get back to work.
Today, I'm catching up with my longtime pal, Mike Cameron. He is the co-founder, president, and COO of Devil's River Whiskey, the president of the Texas Distilled Spirits Association, and a man who is passionate about distilling and all things made artistically with fine ingredients. His company is Devil's River Whiskey. They have a 360-degree approach to business that includes working closely with farmers, giving back to the earth, and so much more. He shares a lot of interesting facts. For instance, I bet you didn't know what it means to be a true bourbon and how many billions, yes, billions with a B, pounds of grain is used to produce whiskey. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Mike Cameron. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm great, Cecily. How you been?
I'm awesome. And I'm more awesome because, oh, listeners, I wish we had television and smell-o-vision, because you can see right in front of me, I have three incredible bottles of Devil's River Whiskey. We haven't cracked it open yet, but that might be a coming. I have to introduce Mike Cameron. We've been pals. We've been reminiscing for actually how long that's been. I don't know. 9 or 10 years, something like that. And he is the co-founder, president, and COO of Devil's River Whiskey, based here in Texas, but in 28 states now, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Wow, and by the time this airs, it may be 30.
If I don't pass out first.
That's right. More whiskey for everybody. Okay, so let's talk about everything. Let's talk about how you got into this business. You're a business guy, but you also are a musician. You have a love of things that are made artistically and have real value and meaning, and it just seems natural that you would do this product.
Yeah, I've always had a passion for making things, whether it's building something or cooking or brewing and now distilling. So probably got into distilling, you know, just a home distilling about maybe 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Wasn't a lot of information about it. And then went into business maybe around 10 years ago. 10 or 11 years ago is when I really started looking at it as a business instead of a personal hobby.
Right.
And the timing was great for whiskey in particular. There's a expanded renaissance period on the whiskey category across the world, not just the United States. And it's just growing and growing every year. Whiskey continues to enjoy double-digit growth every year.
And why do you think that is? Do you think it's the flavor? Do you think it's products? Because you're talking about the category overall is experiencing growth. And that includes good whiskey and not so good whiskey.
That's correct. Yeah.
So is it an affinity to that product, to a brown spirit? Or is it because women are entering the market more and drinking whiskey? Or
it's all the above. I think that the, you know, from the women perspective, there's a lot more women that are drinking whiskey these days. So you're accurate there for sure. Millennials, they don't want to necessarily drink beer like their father did, and a little bit of wine and consumption, but they're really migrating towards spirits. So especially the brown spirits, I think they see it as a form of sophistication and mm-hmm. maybe maturity. And mm-hmm. so that's great for us. We're glad that they are experimenting with our products and trying them. The way the market's really changed specifically on whiskey is that it's not just necessarily about one brand that people are drinking and sticking with. They're trying different brands. That's the same for craft beer. It's the same for wine. But you're seeing a lot of people just trying different whiskey brands, and then they kind of migrate to a few that they prefer because mm-hmm. we all have different palates. And right. But I think those are the reasons that whiskey has really enjoyed this growth period. It's 7 to 10% on bourbon specifically every single year.
It's incredible.
It is. And it's been that way for the last 12 years.
That's amazing. And so also internationally, particularly in Asia, major whiskey drinkers, and are they interested in U.S. brands more, would you say?
Absolutely.
And it's a quintessential American drink.
It is. Know? Bourbon specifically is owned by, it's our Appalachian spirit. We own the rights to bourbon, so you can only make it in the United States. And that's what makes it unique, and it makes what, you know, I think other countries want it or desire it. Even with the tariffs, the Chinese are still wanting that. So people like what they can't have, right? So
right.
It's pretty typical that that's human condition. So India, Asia, to your point, Mexico, we're getting a lot of interest down in Mexico right now with, mm-hmm. with our brands and getting ready to start distribution down there. So Canada, I'm going to be up in Canada next week. Of course, they've had Canadian whiskey, but they like the American bourbons. So right. Doing well everywhere,
yeah.
It seems like.
Well, that's okay. That's like what you want, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it makes everybody happy. And let's do talk about that because you're on this show because, as our tagline says, agriculture tastes good. And you are in an agribusiness, let's face it. So maybe let our audience in a little bit more about the process and how important the actual ingredients are and what that means to really a plant-based business.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm currently the president of the Texas Distilled Spirits Association, and we have lots of members, and we felt like it was important at this evolution of time to establish a benchmark for where we were as an industry in Texas. So we're working with the University of Texas San Antonio on an economic impact study. It'll be done next month, so we're almost finished. It's been a lot of work. We put mm-hmm. in almost a full year of gathering data. A lot harder project than I thought it would be. But it's amazing the facts that are in there, the amount of grains that we're using. It's not millions of pounds of grain, it's billions of pounds of grain.
Oh my gosh.
It's amazing the amount of grain that we're going through.
And that's just in Texas.
It's just in Texas.
Wow.
So, you know, the craft movement is great for agriculture, it's great for farmers. So I think at the end of the day, it's about trying to make it a product that's local. And we're a Texas-based company, and we have a Texas bourbon. We have a Texas rye, and we have a Texas barrel-strength whiskey, all using Texas grain. It's pretty special. Yeah. A lot of distillers around the country use grains from different parts of the United States, and that's fine. That's their model. But we're using Texas grain, and just like the Texas wine growers are using Texas grapes. So we think there's a lot to offer here in our state. It's been a little bit challenging with the yields and some of the consistencies that you're looking for when it comes to the grains, but the farmers in the region have really gotten really good at providing us very good quality grains. Wasn't that way in the beginning, but they've really stepped up and we're getting some really high quality grains now.
I love this because this really is what it's about. It's sort of the reverse integration of a product where you're actually working with the primary source, being the farmer that's growing those grains, and they become a culinary partner in helping you craft these delicious spirits. And let's talk about what that means to the earth. I mean, this product, you're really fostering an economic system that farmers woefully need right now versus here in Texas, of course, versus any overseas or the impact that has on the earth because you're having to ship ingredients from another part of the U.S. and the carbon footprint and all of that happens. So really, when you buy a product like yours, you're making an impact not only on your pocketbook and your palate and what you like, but also you kind of feel like you're doing the right thing.
I really feel that way, that we have such a 360 business. And what I mean by that is we're working with local farmers. They're helping us with our grain sourcing. We use Texas water, which the water that we use in particular for this is actually from the region of the Devil's River, which Texas Parks and Wildlife claims is the purest water in Texas. It's iron-free, it's rich in calcium, and it's got a sweetness profile to it almost. So that's great. And then we age this in oak barrels. When we empty the barrels, we sell the barrels to either craft brewers or craft wineries or other craft distilleries or tequila producers in Mexico or scotch producers in Scotland. They always want used barrels. We have to use new barrels every time. So that's another 360 part of our business. You can use those barrels over and over again. Eventually, they'll lose their ability to condition the spirit properly. So cut them in half and make them planters. Mm-hmm. So there's always some use of it. We recycle cardboard. The spent grain from our distillation process, we donate to farmers and they feed their cows and their pigs with it. So we don't really waste a lot. And at our facility, we recycle our plant process water, which is the water you need to cool and heat the process. So we don't waste that and run it down the drain. We recycle it. And we think that's important. So yeah, it's a very 360 business.
And I think, you know, also when you're in a liquor store and you're looking on the shelves or in other states across America that where you can go into a grocery store and buy spirits. That's we're in the studio today in Texas. So we're not in the studio in New York. So it's a little bit of a different vibe.
But
when you do go to where you purchase your spirits and you buy them, you know, there's a lot of choices. And so these nuances that are really business decisions, business model decisions that you've made behind the product. You know, we like to tell people that stuff because it really does help, I think, in their buying decision of what kind of bourbon, what kind of whiskey they're going to buy.
I feel like every brand has to have a story. And, you know, what's our story? And when I was in college, I went down to the Devil's River and discovered it for the first time. It's a beautiful place. It's untouched, really. You feel like you're the only person down there because you are. It's so far and remote. Cell phones don't work. If you want to come off the grid, they only allow 12 kayaks a day to float down the river by permit only. You have to go through a tutorial with the park ranger before you even float the Devil's River. And it's all in and out. You can't leave anything there. It's just very, very protective and very special. And I hope it stays that way. But that's where the name came from. I just thought, what a cool name for whiskey, and it seems to have worked. It seems to have resonated with consumers, and we try to give back. We take a percentage of the sale of each bottle and donate it to the Devil's River Conservancy to help with river management, river cleanup, river protection. We feel like that's very important.
There's some fine folks over there doing some great things. Let's talk about your doppelganger. You guys look so much alike.
Oh, Captain Jack Coffee Hayes. That's quite a compliment. He was a hero. He was He was actually related to, he's Andrew Jackson's nephew. He came to Texas at a very young age, and he enrolled, signed up with the Texas militia, and then later became a Texas Ranger, one of the original Texas Rangers in the very, very rough period of their existence. And he was just a surveyor by nature. That's where he was trained, to survey land. And he was constantly out surveying and battling Indians just to survive, to finish a survey. So he had quite a few experiences, and there's some great books about John Coffee Hayes. But Hayes County, where San Marcos is named after him. He was down at the Devil's River in 1840, and the Devil's River was actually discovered by Spanish explorers in 1500s, and they called it St. Peter's River. And when the scouts took him down there for the first time, they said, "Captain Jack, this is, you know, St. Peter's River." And it was probably August, and it was probably cactus and rattlesnakes. And he said, "This is more like the Devil's River." So Captain Jack Coffee Hayes named the Devil's River. His autograph is on our bottle. We got permission from the family to use his likeness and name. And we just think it's a nice tie-in to the brand.
And I encourage you, dear listeners, to go to the Devil's River Whiskey website, where you will see a picture of Mike Cameron, my guest today. He is the co-founder, COO, and president of Devil's River Whiskey. And you will also see a picture of Captain Jack. And you hit me up on social media and you tell me if they're not related.
He, you know, another part of his story is in his 60s, he went to San Francisco and basically helped settle the West. He was the original sheriff of that region. And then he went up to New York, and that famous picture of Abraham Lincoln where he's standing, you know, very, you know, astutely in the black and white shot of Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
That photographer took that same picture of John Coffee Hayes, and I have that photograph. And
oh,
it's,
my gosh.
It's going to be on display at our new downtown facility.
Oh, wow. That is so cool. Well, what a segue. You're good. Okay, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about that new downtown. Now, we have listeners all over the world, so we're talking about downtown San Antonio. Currently, the company's based in Dallas, and
Right.
you'll continue manufacturing there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're expanding. I live here in San Antonio, and we're hauling a lot of water that's going all the way up to Dallas. We won't have to haul as much if we're taking it to San Antonio, so that's a positive. A lot of distilleries have made the choice to go out into the hill country or more rural areas, and that's fine. I mean, it works good, but we felt like instead of trying to get tourists to come out to see you, why not go where the tourists are? So we're right in the middle of downtown San Antonio on Houston Street. It's a great location. We're very excited about it. It's a block from the Riverwalk and a block and a half from the Alamo. And there's 37 million tourists that come through San Antonio every year. So we're hoping just by osmosis, we'll have some people come through the door.
Yeah, you will. You will.
We couldn't fit everything down in that downtown facility. So we have a bottling facility up by Fort Sam Houston and an aging and blending facility. So the downtown facility will be distillation. There'll be events there. We'll have a tasting room, a gift shop, and a speakeasy and down in the basement. And it's about 13,000 square feet. So it's a great location, great
spot. That's a destination for a whole evening.
Absolutely.
Or a couple days.
We're hoping.
So it's in the Burns Building, which is a very historic building. And we do have so many tourists that come to San Antonio and incredible architecture. This is one of those cities that as it grew, decided to honor its great architecture and great architects of like Alfred Giles, who had a similar story to Captain Jack that we're talking about, and came over on a boat, honed his skills in New York City, and came down to the Hill Country in San Antonio for the hot springs. So there is a history of healing water and pure water, and we're sitting impartially in San Antonio in the Hill Country on the Edwards Aquifer. So agribusiness is something that's sort of near and dear to our hearts here, and it's exciting that you guys are really representing across the United States. And
so many of our members are in Texas. We've got so many great distillers in Texas making great products, and they're using locally sourced products. So it's great to be part of that organization, and we've got just some really passionate members about what they do. And, you know, if you haven't tried Texas spirits, there's so many great choices out there, whether it's a rum or a rye whiskey, or, you know, there's even, you know, of course, vodkas, and there's people making eau de vie, and there's a lady from Austria making a product called Edelbron, which is a cherry brandy, and she's in Lockhart, Texas, and it's so random, but it's really special that we've got all these great different, you know, limoncello over in Dripping Springs, these great different spirits that people can try.
And Cactus Spirits and Comfort.
That's right. Cactus Spirits and Comfort. And there's a lady doing absinthe and Bastrop. So,
oh my gosh.
Got all these great choices of products that a lot of consumers don't realize. So
we're
kind of a new industry in Texas. We're only really, most of us are about 10 years old or less. There's a huge emergence in the craft distilling industry in the United States, and Texas is number three, and we'd like it to become number one as our goal. So,
and do you think that as goes the consciousness of people in the United States of wanting to learn more about their food and where it comes from and how it's processed and who the makers are? I mean, that's really what this show's about. Do you think as that goes, so is what people drink?
Absolutely. Yeah, what people are consuming is very important, where it comes from and how it's made. And local is continuing to grow. People just want to buy local, and at least regionally. And that trend we've seen continue for many, many, the last, I'd say, 7 or 8 years in a strong way.
So let's talk about these different bottles I have in front of me. And listeners, you'll be able to go to the website and our show website, and you'll be able to see these. So tell us the difference for people listening that... You know, of course, you want them to buy all three, but they may buy them one at a time here.
No, so the I've always loved bourbon. My mother was born in Louisville, Kentucky, and my grandfather was there his whole life. And I grew up in a family of whiskey drinkers and always enjoyed bourbon, even at a probably too young age. But it's just a great flavor. And I think that it's the thing I like about it the most is it belongs to the United States. There's very strict requirements for making bourbon, and that is it's got to be distilled at less than 160 proof. It's got to be put in a new American white oak barrel at no more than 125 proof. It's got to be at least 51% corn, and it's got to be aged in the United States. And so we own that, just like the Jalisco region of Mexico owns tequila or cognac region of France or champagne from France. It's good and it's smart that our government decided back in 1964 to determine that bourbon is truly an American spirit. So that's the first product I introduced, was a 90 proof small batch Texas bourbon. What is a small batch? A small batch is anything 125 barrels or less. So this is made in small quantities. 125 barrels of whiskey may seem like a lot, but compared to the big guys, it's a drop in the bucket, literally. So that's what a small batch means, is 125 barrels or less typically. And then it's finished in we have a chill filtration process that we finish the whiskey in. The mash bill is, in our particular case, 75% corn, 21% rye, and 4% barley. So every whiskey, no matter if it's bourbon or scotch or, you know, Canadian whiskey or Irish whiskey, it's going to have a different mash bill. Bourbons typically have at least 51% corn. We'll always have 51% corn.
And that's so wonderful going in the mash room. You know, I mean, that smell is something you never forget.
It's great. It is. It's my favorite place. It really has always got that fresh smell of grain. It's very earthy. But you can take the mash bill and line it up 5 different times, the same exact mash bill, and you add a different yeast strain to each one of those mash bills, and they'll all be different. They'll all come out different because of that yeast strain. The yeast is a very important part of it. We have a proprietary yeast that we use, and that's an important part of the whole process. The yeast brings out what's called esters, which are going to give you notes of honey or cinnamon or chocolate or caramel or leather or tobacco, all these different notes that you may get in a sip of whiskey. And it comes from the yeast. Of course, the grain, but the yeast establishes the level of tannins. The next product we came out with was the rye whiskey. And rye whiskey is the exact same requirements for bourbon. It's got to be at least 51% rye. This is a low rye whiskey. In other words, it's right at 51%. I did that on purpose because I didn't want it to be so rye forward that it's too spicy. Rye is going to bring in some spicy notes. So it's got corn all in it also and barley, but it's mainly rye. And if you haven't tried a rye whiskey, try ours. I get people all the time at tasting saying, I don't really drink rye whiskey. Try this one. We just won a double gold medal in the Asian Spirits Competition, and we've had 7 gold medals on it overall. So it's done very well in competition.
So that absolutely is maybe something new to try.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. If you haven't tried rye whiskey or you did a long time ago, try one now to see if you don't have a difference of opinion.
I'm going to take your advice on that because I think of myself as not a rye drinker, but okay.
Yeah.
You sold me.
Just people walk up to the tasting table and they say, well, I don't want to try the rye. And I'll say, just give it a try. And they just do it like reluctantly. Mm-hmm. And then they say, wow, I guess I do like rye. So,
well, they like your rye.
It's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. And then the last product we have is the barrel strength whiskey. That is 117 proof. So that's what it is coming right out of the barrel. So this whiskey has been removed from the barrel. It's been filtered to remove, you know, any particulates and put in a bottle. So it's the whiskey I prefer to drink is barrel strength, just because it, in my opinion, it's the way whiskey was originally meant to be enjoyed, is right out of the barrel. In the old saloon days, they would have these barrels delivered by either a train or a horse and buggy, and the delivery times were unreliable. Mm. So they had to make the whiskey go further. So what they do, they added water to it and proofed it down. That's where the 80 proof came from.
Okay.
Or even less, probably. So this is the way whiskey was meant to be consumed and enjoyed, I think. But
so you need to get into like your Lonesome Dove or your like Gunsmoke frame of mind and pour yourself.
That's right.
A glass.
There's so many great stories about San Antonio and whiskey history, like the Buckhorn Saloon right across the street from us. I don't know if you've seen that in a while, but there's a collection of art made with rattlesnake tails.
Yes.
And the story goes, Miss Frederick was the barkeep, and who's the wife of Mr. Frederick. And the cowboys would come in off the, you know, out of the ranching areas and come into her bar for a shot of whiskey. And in exchange, they would give a rattlesnake tail. So she collected those over the years in exchange for shots of whiskey. So it's kind of neat to think about, you know, that.
Barter.
Barter. The old barter system, yeah. So
absolutely. Boy, she must have a lot of tails.
She's got a bunch of them, yeah. She sure did. She did a good job of collecting them. So that's the portfolio. We'll be releasing a brand new expression this spring, which will be kind of a premier bourbon. It's extra aged, and we've been working on it for quite some time, and we're very excited about it. Limited quantities, a little bit more expensive, but it'll be really special. So,
well, that's so exciting. I mean, it's like it's a never-ending process because it is a agri-based business, and you really have so many different moving parts that go into a bottle of spirits. I love for people to learn, you know, the background of what it takes to get that drink into your glass. It almost makes you want to sip it a little slower and taste it a little longer. But
the one advantage we have in Texas is the aging process. It's accelerated. So you don't necessarily have to wait as long as you would when it's aged in a different state like Kentucky or Tennessee, mm-hmm. because of our extreme heat. So the way it works is the whiskey gets put into the barrel after it comes off the still, and it's clear. When it ages and comes out of the barrel, it's this beautiful amber color. So that amber color comes from the wood. It's extracting the lignans and the congeners out of the wood, and the great notes that you get come from that process of going in and out of the barrel staves. But most of the time, because it's hot down here, the whiskey expands into the staves and stays in the staves for a longer period of time. So you get an accelerated aging effect down in Texas, which is great.
Right. So it's just a geographical
benefit.
So let's talk about recipes, because, you know, some people just don't want to drink a sip whiskey, mm-hmm. you know,
sure.
And they want it mixed into stuff. So where can we get some really new and interesting recipes?
I have like 30 on our website that I would recommend. I don't have them all memorized by heart, but, you know, me personally, I like whiskey neat, which is just whiskey in a glass. That's how I like it. Some people like whiskey and ice. Some people like whiskey and Coke. However you like to drink whiskey, it's your choice. I don't judge people for how they like to drink their whiskey. The challenge that we come across is that it's traditional that whiskey is consumed in the winter months, the fall and winter months. And, you know, it kind of softens up after the spring starts. And so we call those clear spirits months. So a lot of vodka and gin being consumed.
Well, see, that happened to me the other day. So I was with a friend, and we were looking at some studio space and things like that and talking about what we're going to do. And out came the spirits, and he is a big Scotch drinker. And he said, you got to try this Scotch. And I said, well, what kind of Scotch do you like? He says, oh, I like single malt. Well, like what? Well, Oban and, you know, Glenfiddich and Glenmorangie. And, you know, I gave him a whole long list. And he said, well, I have some of those. I said, oh, but I'm not going to drink them now because it's too hot. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I don't drink dark spirits. Mm-hmm. in these hot summer months. And he told me a lot of reasons why I was wrong for that. So I guess I'm getting...
Well, I agree with him.
Yeah, I guess I'm getting it again.
You're typical on the consumer. They like the vodkas and the gins in the summer months. So our challenge has been, how do we get consumers to migrate towards whiskey in the summer months? So we've created some really nice summer drinks that you can prepare with whiskey. One of them is a Rasmanian Devil, which is really good. It's a raspberry liqueur that's ice and it's got whiskey in it, and people love it. I mean, they really like that drink a lot. So examples like that, we've got to get creative and not just focus on the winter months. Let's try to sell whiskey year round. And so in order to do that, you've got to appeal to consumers with some choices.
Right. So you and I did a dinner about, I don't know, 3 years ago, something like that. And we did a great pop-up whiskey dinner. And I think I created 7 courses, and we put whiskey in every single course.
We did.
And then by the end, you brought in your baby Martin and sang some songs. I forgot about that, too. It just popped into my head as you were saying it. But where I'm going with this is, and no, I'm not going to tell everybody, you know, what happened that night. But there was a fun group of people. Let me put that. I think we closed the place down. It happened to be my place, so I left it over longer.
But I remember that.
Yeah, that was fun. That was real fun. But my point really is that cooking with whiskey is a great thing. Mm-hmm. It really is. It can really change the flavor of so many dishes, and it doesn't have to be meat-based either.
That's correct. People are making great desserts with whiskey and sauteing vegetables in whiskey. I mean, you'd be surprised the things you can do with it, and it does add a completely different element to the overall profile. It's like wine. It's great for cooking.
Right.
It really is.
Well, so what's next other than the new product coming out and the new place on Burns? I guess that's enough. But I mean, what are you thinking about, Mike Cameron, in your industry?
Well, I hope the trend continues. You know, bourbon is funny. In 1980, you couldn't give bourbon away. It was a bunch of old stinky men that were drinking bourbon. That's right. All that was around.
Right.
Now everybody's drinking bourbon. So I believe
what changed? The product better? Better product?
No. Bourbon's always been good.
It's always been good to you.
I think that consumer education, mm-hmm. wanting different choices, not wanting to do the same thing that everybody else has done, that's been part of it. But it's truly enjoying a great period right now. But it's just like anything else. You know, back in the 80s and early 90s, vodka was doing fantastic because of shows like Sex and the City, or we said earlier, Tex and the City.
Oh, full disclosure, when I moved back to Texas from New York and L.A., Mike had a wonderful vodka company, and I was going on a morning show, and I said, hey, Mike, you know, we should do a cocktail for this morning show. And he goes, I know, I'll make a Tex in the City. And you did. And everybody wanted that recipe. We should put that recipe back. We should make it with, is there a way to make it with bourbon?
Absolutely. We'll figure it out.
Let's figure that out. That was a good one.
But that trend in vodka was just on fire, doing so great. And now vodka's still popular, but it's flattened out. Whiskey still continues to climb. There's going to be a time where it peaks. Mm-hmm. We're hoping that's a while from now.
Right.
But right now, it's a great time to be in the whiskey business, and consumers seem to be clamoring for it. And there's a lot of work that goes into whiskey. And I think there's a respect for the spirit more so than a lot of other spirits because it takes time.
I think of it as a traditional drink. Mm-hmm. And I think of it in times of upheaval and uncertainty that, you know, there's some things that, you know, it's not bad to have a whiskey in your banky, your blanket, and curl up and feel like all's right with the world.
We say that whiskey is recession proof. In good times, people drink whiskey, and in bad times, they drink more, maybe. So we're pretty happy with the likelihood that spirits are going to be around for a while.
Well, good. Well, we know you will be around for a while.
We hope so.
And we'll be down with our cameras down at the opening of Burns and give our listeners a little video peek of what's happening.
It's a really cool building. It was built in 1918, as you referred to earlier. The American Institute of Architecture chose our site a couple months ago to hold their annual event there and just overtook our building. And that was a nice testament to the cool architecture that's been preserved in our space. It's just really, it's supposed to be haunted. I haven't seen any ghosts or heard any ghosts, but it's just a great spot. you know, the outside trim of the building even was this kind of green patina. And I asked one of the contractors, I said, is there any way you could buff that? Because I think it's copper. So he did, and it is copper.
Oh, wow. That's so a sign.
It just goes with the building. So it's great display windows that we've had to keep because of historic, and we plan to fill those with some cool displays of some stuff. So
yeah, well, we'll look forward to it. Well, Mike, thank you for coming into the studio.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You are all over the place. And really, if you're in New York, ask for Devil's River Bourbon. If you're in where? Where's give us some cities.
28 states. So we're in the major cities around the United States. I would say the shortest way would be go to our website and you can see all the states that we're in. I won't name them all, but any major state, as far as populated state, we are located.
And I want everybody to know they can go to devilsriverwhiskey.com, and that's with the E-Y. Let's give a little inside scoop on E versus no E.
Sure. So the American whiskey typically is going to have an E in it. Not all American whiskeys. You take a Maker's Mark, they do not use an E because it's just a kind of a throwback to their heritage, which is Scottish. So Scotch whiskeys do not have E in the name. So typically when you see an E, it's going to be an American whiskey.
Well, congratulations and more to come. And I've been with Mike Cameron here, my guest today, in the studio in San Antonio. Catch him if you can. Check out their website. He's all over the place all the time at music events and things happening at great places all across our great country and Canada as well. And Devil's River Bourbon Whiskey is absolutely delicious. I'm looking at three bottles here right now, and I think we need to have a toast.
Thank you, Cecily. I appreciate it.
Whether it's a plane, a train, or an automobile, make your way to this culinary destination.
The Majestic West has a rich and flavorful culinary history of its own, and we have found a ride to get you there that will completely blow your mind. According to Visit New Mexico, the Cumbres and Toltec is a steam-powered railroad virtually unchanged from how it looked, sounded, and felt more than a century ago. The railroad has been lovingly restored and continues to be maintained by the nonprofit, the Cumbres and Toltec Scenic Railroad Commission. Visitors travel through national forests, high plains, mountain tunnels, and steep canyons, all with the wisdom of onboard docents guiding the trip. One of the many things we love about this living museum is that the Cumbres and Toltec is jointly operated by the states of New Mexico and Colorado. These two states joined together because they realized the importance of this heritage railroad experience and historical ride through the many legs of the journey. According to docent Rich Muth, this ride through unique terrain is an exploration in learning about the flora and fauna, history of people in the area, and the challenges faced for the many who carved the narrow gauge, laid the track, and forged history to settle the West. One can only imagine the stories. The steam locomotive is at the head of beautifully restored passenger cars that make the incredible climb through the mountain pass. Options to start your day journey include culinary and cultural destinations Santa Fe, Denver, Albuquerque, and more that lead to Antonito, Colorado, or Chama, New Mexico. Links to the maps are on our site to help you choose your breathtaking ride. These affordable memory-making day trips also include meals and libations depending on your route. We suggest beginning the experience with a hearty meal in your starting city and spend the day riding the rails where you can also enjoy beer and wine along the way. You're going to have plenty of memories to talk about over dinner that same night. Wow, what a day. We have posted some videos on grapesgrainsgrub.com because you really need to hear the train and see the environment to truly appreciate this incredible destination.
And now here's Cecily's picks.
Okay, I teased at the top of the show that there's something I never thought would be a staple in my pantry, and now it is. It's avocado oil spray. I know. I always wondered, was I overpaying to use a spray, and would it have all these weird ingredients in it? And as it turns out, Chosen Foods, that is an incredible company that was founded by this traveling naturopath doctor, Karsten Hagen, I hope I pronounced that correctly, discovered this powerful effect that traditional foods were having in native cultures, particularly avocados. Now, there's been such an avocado craze, which I'm thrilled about because spending my time in South Texas and Mexico as a kid, Believe me, we ate a ton of them and we still do today. But this spray, I'm just bonkers for it. Now, you'll find all the information on our site, but I have to tell you, I did a price comparison from just like pouring oil and spraying. I actually buy both, but they have different applications. And sometimes you just want a little spritz. Plus, they have these incredible flavors. If I set them all, it would take me way too long. But they have plain avocado oil, garlic, Italian herb, chipotle, chili lime, lemon dill. The list goes on and on. There's some sweeter kind of ones like a spiced chai, cinnamon. So you can imagine all the applications that you can, you know, use these for. You can just lightly, what I do is I lightly spray them over veggies when I'm roasting them and pop them in the oven and lots of other stuff. So what I really love though about Chosen Foods is really their sensibility of why they do what they do and how they do what they do. They use 350 million, 350 million hand harvested avocados a year. They work very closely with their farmers in Mexico. It's Haas avocados, which are my favorites, and they grow at really high elevation. So you don't really have to put any kind of bad stuff on them for, you know, they just grow naturally because of the elevation that they're grown at. They're non-GMO verified, if that matters to you. And that's it. It's really good. We know how great they are for us. And what I love about this oil, too, is it has a very high smoke point. Okay, so you'll find it on our site. All right, this pick is not for people. Well, I guess it's for people, but it's meant to be for dogs. I'll explain. These are some treats that my two dogs, I have these two rescues. One of them's an old lab called Brownie, and who's just such a lover and just so such a great soul. And then there's Kika, who is not quite as old, but she's a fiery mix and big personality. So these dogs, of course, they eat great food, but besides that, they go bonkers for these Doggy Delirious grain-free peanut butter flavored bones. Now, they're little, you know, little bones, little cookies. They're shaped like bones. I cannot tell you, like, they recognize the box. That's how excited they get when I open the box. Now, this company is such a cool company. You hear me right now. I'm turning this to read to you off the box because I wish their website was better. It does have good pictures of the treats, but it doesn't really have as much information that's actually on the box. So I'm going to tell you, it's really cute. They say the dogs have gotten loose. The treats are baked in Washington State using only the best ingredients we can get our paws on. And all ingredients were originally intended for humans to eat. So nothing weird or gross ever. So you gotta love that. So it goes on and on. You can't see that on their site. Please, hello, if you're listening, put that information on your site because I think that's the crux of this whole thing. Now, the ingredients, they have a lot of different flavors. My dogs love the peanut butter ones. The ingredients are all organic: pea flour, canola oil, cane molasses, peanut butter, and pumpkin puree. So that's what I'm saying. Like, you probably could eat it if you got hungry enough. I know my dogs absolutely love them. And I also love the cute little illustrations they have on their site. You're going to love it too. So the thing about these dog treats are, they might seem a little bit pricey, but I have to tell you, these dogs are so important in our lives for so many people. And I think it's great to give them things that are healthy for them and extend their lives. And if they're good enough for us to eat, then they're definitely good enough for our beloved pets. Those were some fun picks, if I do say so myself. If you have a product, destination, idea, or location you want us to know about, just go to our site for all the many, many ways to contact us. We really would love to hear your picks, and you know, you might just hear them on the show. I just love creating this show, and I want to thank my special guest, Mike Cameron, and all the people who work so hard on it, and the stories of these wonderful, hardworking people who fill our bellies and souls, I think, are so inspiring, and I always learn something in the process of bringing these stories here for Grapes, Grains, and Grub. I hope you learned something, too. It's our mission to bring you insights and information directly from the source. You know, we're living in such an exciting and rapidly evolving time. And due to technology, our perspective is much more global. And that, of course, I always say this, includes our culinary perspective. Now, I'm finding that the more that our world opens up, the more we learn about different cultures and authentically straight from the source we're learning, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on other social media, whether it's documentaries, you know, we're learning about their ancient ways, but also the new ways of doing things, of how to feed ourselves. And it's such great information. But what we all know is that no matter where we live, we can make an effort to buy fresh food as close to the source as possible and start a conversation with the people in our local markets or farmers markets or even restaurants and ask the chefs, ask the wait staff, where does the food come from? They really are happy to give you the information and you can buy it for your own home. You know, I continue to have the great blessing to interview these incredible people and you'll meet many of them on this season of the Grapes, Grains, and Grub audio show, and you really can get to know them even better on our website, where you'll find much more extended stories, behind the scene pictures, and all kinds of extras. We're at GrapesGrainsGrub.com. Our hashtag is Agriculture Tastes Good. And do please sign up for our newsletter. You won't regret it. Now remember, our full stories, including the culinary destinations and my picks, are on the site. Just take a look. I'm so grateful for you listening. I'm Cecily Armstrong, and for dinner tonight, I'm having roasted cauliflower and broccolini with honey glazed roasted limes topped with shaved pecorino cheese and topped with spiced almonds and cured olives. I cannot wait. I will pour some dry Fino-style sherry to sip along with dinner. It tastes so good with salty cheeses and olives. What are you having? Let me know before next week's episode. Until next time, adios.
The Grapes, Grains, and Grub Show is produced by Nitex Productions, Nitex Studios Originals. The executive producer is Cecily Armstrong, producer Stephanie Locke. Associate producer is Polly Moore and the fine folks at Nitex Studios. Theme music and original composition by Frank Castro.